The reading this morning is from Genesis chapters 18 and 21. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre. As he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day, he looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself under the tree. Let me bring you a little bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah, and said, "Make ready quickly 3 measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes." Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant, who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he prepared, and he set it before them. And he stood by them and under the tree while they ate. They said to him, "Where is your wife Sarah?" And he said, "They're in the tent." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of a woman. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I have grown old, and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why does Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old?' Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. He said, "Oh yes, you did laugh." The Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah had bore him. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 years old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Now Sarah said, "God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And she said, "Who would ever have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." The word of the Lord.
The gospel is from Mark chapter 10. Jesus looked at them and said, "For mortals it is impossible, but not for God. For God all things are possible." The gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Probably the shortest gospel lesson you've ever heard. But I want you to remember that by being short doesn't mean it doesn't have something valuable, and the valuable really comes, "For God all things are possible." I think that some of you may be saying, "Oh sure, yeah. Because you've lived life long enough to somehow, like me, have become cynical at times. And you begin to say, well, when is that going to happen? When is God going to show up? Things aren't happening the way I want them or I expected them to happen." The story in Genesis, where I'm going to stay focused on today, the story in Genesis is a story of where that gospel lesson pronounces, "For God all things are possible," in the birth of Isaac to Sarah and Abraham. It sounds like the Christmas story, actually, an Old Testament Christmas story. First of all, there's promise, and then there is the movement towards fulfillment. Walter Brueggemann, a favorite Old Testament theologian of mine, when he talks about chapter 21, those first few verses that we read and some of the verses that follow, he says, "We have the central fulfillment within the Abraham tradition. The birth of the child is the fulfillment of all the promises, the resolution of all the anguish. The point that I see here in this story of Abraham and Sarah is a story that helps me understand the characteristic or the nature of God. It's not just about those two people, but it is about how God operates in the world. The fulfillment in chapter 21, when the baby was finally born, is really God in action. It's a story about how God is God. Here we see God at the very heart of who he is. God as one who keeps the promises, turns darkness into light, changes mourning into dancing, transforms weeping into joy. Here we are given in this story a glimpse at God's very heart as God transforms Sarah's mocking laughter into a joyous laughter of faith. But let me go back and set the story up a little bit. I'm going to go from this 18th chapter all the way back to the 12th chapter of Genesis. One of the strong key elements of the Old Testament, in fact, the first three verses of chapter 12, God makes an initial promise to this man called Abram. That, if you aren't familiar yet, is the shortened version of Abraham. Abram, that's what he was called. His wife was Sarai. Sarai. She was barren, we are told. Now, that was a very disgraceful, a guilt-ridden, shame-ridden existence. Someone who could have no children. God made a threefold promise to these two people. One, that they would have much land. Okay, that they would become a great nation, which meant that they were going to have a lot of ancestors, a lot of relatives, and that they would be blessed so that they could be a blessing to others. It says in chapter 12, in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Well, the problem here is that without the birth of a child, those last two promises are nothing. They mean absolutely nothing. But the years went by, and Sarai remained barren. She and Abraham had no child, and they grew old, we are told. In chapter 15, three more chapters beyond that, sometimes later, we're not told how later it was, God spoke to Abram again in order to renew the promise. God took Abram outside into the country. If you're from a city like I was growing up, it's the most scariest thing in the world because you're taken outside into this vast darkness and you look up and what do you see but galaxies and stars? You kind of are breath taken away. And God says, come on, Abram, look up, count them. And I can almost imagine Abram going one, two, three, you know, and I don't know how long it took him, but it began to realize that, wait a minute here. You can't have a sky full of descendants when you don't even have one child. What kind of promise is that? And Sarai still remained barren. She and Abram had no child, and they grew older, in fact. Was God messing with Abram and Sarai's minds and hearts? Chapter 16. Sarai was now getting tired, we are told, in the waiting for this promised child. She suggested that Abram, her husband, you know, kind of hook up with her slave, Hagar. Take her for this woman to bear your child. Well, Abram, being a dutiful husband, listened to the voice of his wife. And finally, Abram got his child. And he named that child Ishmael. Abram, we are told, was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. But what's interesting in this, Abram gets the fulfillment of the promise for him, but Sarah doesn't. It's as if she's left out, as if she's all of a sudden excluded from this covenant that God made with both of them earlier on. Wasn't she part of it? Was God done with her or not? Chapter 17. God appeared again to Abram to repeat the promise yet another time. God changed Abram's name now to Abraham, which means, by the way, in the change, I have made you the ancestor of a multitude of nations. Okay? For Abraham, that's good. But then this is interesting what happens in 17. He says, and God made it clear that Sarai now was not to be excluded, but to be part of the covenant as well. Sarah shall be her name. A change. New change for her. I will bless her, and I will give you a son by her. Wow. Spoken again. Abram's reaction was twofold. First, he fell on his face and he did exactly what his wife did later. He laughed. You gotta be kidding. And second, which is most interesting, he asked God not to keep that promise. He said, I have my son. I've got my son by Hagar. I don't need another son. Well, I think our lives travel the same journey as these two people. We hear God proclaim to us, and we've heard it all of our life, again and again, that God will be there. God, we are in God's hands. That God will provide for what we need. That God will be with us forever, right? Isn't that the text of our faith? We come to worship and hear that again and again. Yet there is a reality that's introduced to our life, something that Pastor Julie raised up last week, a reality that we need to take note of that somehow speaks different to us. It's a reality that our experience has now taught us that what we had hoped for is not happening. You see, I hope this isn't a surprise to any of you. We grow old, right? And sadly, we lose our memory far too young. And we have buyer's remorse. You know what buyer's remorse is? When you buy something, you think you've just made the greatest deal in the world, and about an hour later, you say, what in the world did we do that for? How will we pay for this? I don't think this is a good thing. Buyer's remorse because the expectations we had are too often better than the fulfillment. And we are left with this, what next attitude? We get to places in life which are not where we wanted to be. Fulfillment, as we see it, so often sucks. Our world has taught us well to live in the fulfillment of the promise, and so that's the only thing we look forward to. It's got to happen, right? The way we want it to happen, when we want it to happen. Come on, those of you who go through illness, you know what that's about. Those of you who go through anxiety and all kinds of other stress, you know what that's about. When are we going to find some peace? When are we going to gain some health? Instead of living in the hope of the promise, we live in the fulfillment of the promise, and most of the time that fulfillment is what we want, when we want it. Thus, if we do not get what we expect, we lose trust or faith. Abraham hears the promise again, and Sarah overhears it as well. In Genesis 18, now that we've arrived to this story, this was not a new promise. They had heard it, like I said, more than once. It's hard to believe. For what kind of promise is harder to believe than a promise that has been repeatedly not kept? And what kind of promise maker is harder to believe than one who has continually not kept a promise? So when God yet again repeated the promise, I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife shall have a son, one can hardly blame Sarah for laughing. And for us maybe as well. Laughing, as I was somehow imagined growing up, was this woman behind some canvas tent just silently chuckling to herself. But the Hebrew expresses something even greater than that. It was like this big belly laugh that finally said, this is impossible. Sarah is scolded for her laughing by God. She denied that she laughed, and I love the response by the messenger. Oh yes, you did laugh. Almost like a parent reminding the child. But what's really important, I think, in this exchange between Sarah and God about her laughing is that the messenger questions Sarah in her skepticism and says, when she says, shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? And in good Jewish tradition, a question is given back. Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? And I think finally that's the question that I, and I hope and I think all of us too, need to ask ourselves. Is anything too wonderful for the Lord as we slump and sink into this skeptical depression of faithlessness? Sarah became cynical by the years, over the years, like we do. She was exhausted by God's unkept promises as she saw it. She was afraid to start to hope again, and sometimes we are too. She, I think, clearly thought that there was plenty of things too wonderful for the Lord, and she was one of them. In chapter 21, we come to the fulfillment. The child Isaac is born. His name, by the way, if you caught it, means laughter. God renewed the promise to Abraham in chapter 17, and that old man laughed. When God renewed it in chapter 18, the old woman laughed. And I just can't help but think that when the child was born, God had the last laugh. That God recognized the impatience of creation, but had not forgotten the promise. I believe that's what our faith is partly hinged on. That we not forget the very promise that calls St. Paul to speak into the Corinthian church when they were becoming cynical, when they were wondering when God was going to show up. And he talks about the resurrection and he says, if Jesus was not raised from the dead, then we are poor, miserable people. But the truth is, and I think that's what we have to always keep reminding ourselves, that the God of promise carries out, fulfills those promises as we have witnessed in Jesus himself. That this is one who has not absented himself from our life, even in the midst of our struggle and pain and suffering, but has chosen to come into our life. Even the very Son of God endures that same kind of existence, which helps to remind us that as we cling to that one, we find ourselves led not just to the cross, but to the empty tomb and the resurrection of life each and every day. Forgiveness is one of the signs of the resurrection. New beginnings and new moments of life, of hope, are signs of the resurrection. Sarah is the person of faith who finally says, oh good, now they can laugh with me, not at me. This is the moment in which we discover that God's promise is not just for Sarah and Abraham, but actually this promise or covenant, as we call it, is enough for the whole world. For God so loved the whole world, we have said, that God sent his Son, Jesus, for all creation. With that in our heart, is there anything too wonderful for the Lord? Amen.